Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat battered by the waves was far from the land and the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost," and they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God."
Rescue me, I am drowning in doubt. I cannot see you. It's waters deep, I've been treading too long. Now I'm sinking, will you let me see if you are there? Will you rescue me if you are there? Comfort me, as fear is dragging me down, deep in the darkness. Frigid sea, my whole heart has gone cold. No, I'm dying. Will you answer me if you are there? Will you rescue me if you are there?
There are a lot of times I have, this is confession, there's a lot of times I have fantasized about being rescued. And that's because I am not an overly trusting person. I want to be, but I'm not. Trust is a very difficult thing. It's hard to achieve. It's challenging to nurture it. It's such a pleasure when it holds, isn't it? It's devastating when it falls apart. And trust and risk go hand in hand. In some ways, you know, trust is simply, to say it simply, trust is nothing more than risk assessment. And it involves the expected behavior and assessing the expected behavior of another person and the calculated outcome of engaging with that person. In other ways, trust is an alternative to calculated risk assessment. Instead of calculating the risks, one willingly relies on another, right, for habitual, social, or moral reasons. And what I mean by that is, like, they're your brother. You better be able to trust them. They're your best friend. You better be able to trust them. they're a police officer, you better be able to trust them, right? There's also the understanding of trust as moral obligation. You're in a relationship in which the person you trust has a moral obligation to come through. In this way, you begin to believe that the risk factor is greatly diminished, or maybe it doesn't even exist at all until it isn't that way anymore, right? And then we're back at the beginning of everything I said, which is that trust is a difficult thing, and trust and risk go hand in hand. I believe that each person has their own unique, like, continuum of trust and risk. And that is why what seems risky to me does not seem risky to somebody else. And for the most part, here, I'm just talking about basic risk assessment, okay? So, I want to be really clear. I believe that, for the most part, at all costs, you should keep your feet on the ground. It's simple. Firmly. I do not believe our feet should do things, such as leave the ground to sail across canyons on zip lines. It's ridiculous. I also don't think they should leave the ground to fly out of airplanes, even though they think they're attached to a parachute. Okay? I also think that it's best, and I do want to do a caveat. It's okay if your feet leave the ground on a motorcycle. That would be okay for me. I don't know where Michael is, but I just want to be clear. But I also think it's really good to keep your feet on the ground on dry land. Okay? Water brings with it a great deal of risk. And I respect water. One time when I forgot to respect water and its power, and my feet were in Hawaii off dry land, I almost died in a kayak. So I don't ever want to do that again. Ever. But I do like floating on top of water and looking at it, and it feels good. So, with that in mind and that framework, I want you to know that a few moments ago, I heard about something called paddleboarding. So I asked around because I heard those boards were a little wider, okay? So I asked around, that's my risk assessment. And folks said it wasn't easy, but it wasn't hard. And I asked people who kind of knew me. And that if I could do yoga, I could probably paddleboard. So I was interested. And one of our people has her own paddleboard. And she said she would teach me. And she gave me permission to share this, just so you know. And I took these pictures. Her name's Susanna. Susanna, I want to tell you about her. She's a behaviorist. Susanna's work in the world is to help children and families and schools to develop behavior plans for children with special needs, okay? Specifically those on the autism spectrum, but any kids. So for me, what I know about Susanna is her behavior is consistency. Little to no risk to me that Susanna is going to be erratic. And she's part of our church, my church. So I can willingly rely on her. And finally, Susanna has been in a kitchen table with me for a few years. And we've shared deeply with each other. Risk and trust with Susanna, I'm in. So Sophia and I tried paddleboarding. It was really fun. And we were at Folsom Lake, and there was no wind. And Susanna taught us how to get on and off the board. She taught us how to paddle. She taught us how to turn. It was safe. It was secure. It was totally perfect. We took a break. It was wonderful. There's no, like, just if you're bracing yourself, there's no, I didn't fall in. I was good. I'm good. And so we're hanging out on our paddle boards, and I said, you know what, Susanna, I've heard that people actually do yoga on these boards. Because I knew Susanna did yoga too. And she said, really? I said, yeah, doesn't that seem crazy? And then, that, look at that. That is amazing to me. Absolutely amazing.
You didn't do that?
No, I did not. Oh, that's so not. Oh. Do you know how many risks? I mean, raise your hand if you take yoga. I just want to know. So, okay, those of us who know yoga a little bit, here's the thing. The top left picture is move number one. First you do that. I still don't do that in yoga. Okay? So, I don't. And then you do the middle on the left. And each of those, you stay there on moving water. And then you get your legs up, and I'm on the other side going, you can stop, you can stop. And then she did that. There are so many risks. What seems risky to me does not seem risky to someone else. And I think this is what the disciples might have been thinking as they watched this scene that Matt read for us unfold right before them. A preacher named Barbara Brown Taylor says, at the beginning of today's story, Peter, who we hear about, is just one of the crowd. He's tired after feeding the 5,000. And Jesus has sent the disciples on ahead of him and has gone by himself into the mountains to pray. And by nightfall, Jesus is still at it. And while he's out on the sea, his disciples have this situation on their hands. Wind, waves, water, boat, and they're all tossing about. And Peter is the one to watch there, I think. He's the one to watch. The rest of them stay in the boat. Peter is often the one to watch, is what we all learn. Peter is holding trust and risk right before our eyes. See, later in the Gospel of Matthew, Peter will be one of the three to follow Jesus up the mountain of Transfiguration. And when they get there, the other two disciples are like dumbfounded into silence because both Moses and Elijah appear and they're having a conversation with Jesus. And the other disciples can't even speak, but Peter pipes up and says, Lord, hey, me, if you wish, I'm going to build you three booths that I hear you guys talking. I'll do it. I'm on it. He just breaks in. In other parts of the gospel account, Peter straight up asked Jesus, I love this, will you explain that to me, please? Explain the whole parable, please. Peter, in the Gospel of Matthew, answers Jesus' questions first. Peter gets who Jesus is. Matthew is really big on showing us this. And at the same time, Peter is the one to deny who Jesus is. It is Peter whom Jesus calls the rock of the church. And then Peter, who moments later is likened to Satan by Jesus and called a stumbling block by Jesus. And then Jesus tells him, you're not even on God's side, Peter. It's Peter who promises to never deny who Jesus is, and then he does it. Peter is the one whom Jesus asked to stay up all night while he goes to pray in the Garden of Gethsemane, and guess what Peter does? He takes a nap. Peter takes risks. He tries to follow Jesus. He reminds me of Linus in this old Peanuts cartoon. I'll let you read it. Peter really thinks he has mastered something. I can swim, I can swim. I just learned how to swim. I can swim 4 feet. Well, I'm glad to hear that, Linus. Congratulations. And he says, Linus does, "Yes, sir, if I'm ever aboard an ocean liner and it sinks 4 feet from the shore, I won't have a thing to worry about." Right? Over and over again, Peter is the one. And if you ask me, Charlie Brown's in the background on that fourth frame, like the disciples sitting in the boat. And he's thinking, making it 4 feet is not what I would call a master swimmer. But look how excited Linus is at his stage of discovery. Peter is the one to watch, and he's the disciple who takes risks, who celebrates leaps of faith, who stumbles, but who gets up, brushes himself off, and keeps getting back up again. How does he keep doing it? I think it's impressive. He tries things. He absolutely doubts. He absolutely has faith. Both of those things at once. Did you hear what he says? He has these things at once. He says, "Lord, if." Lord, if. If it is. If it is you. In two words, Peter says it all. Lord, if. He expresses his faith and his trust by saying that word, Lord. And then he moves into a risk assessment, which I'm going to name it doubt. If. No wonder I like him. Peter calls Jesus Lord, an expression of faith and a recognition of how much he trusts Jesus and ascribes authority to him. He doesn't say, dude, it's Lord, capital L. And then he says, if it is you, which is all doubt and challenge and conditions that he's putting on Jesus. Where is Peter going with this? I know where I would go with this. Someone asks me to do something, and I say, yes. Sure. If you make absolutely certain that there is no way for me to fail. If you make absolutely certain there is no way I'm going to hurt somebody. And if you make absolutely certain that there's no way for me to fail. That's how trusting I am. That's what I do. I put people in terrible positions. I'm not an overly trusting person. I told you this. I don't want to do something that is going to cause me pain or anyone else. That's probably why I really enjoyed reading Barbara Brown Taylor this week and how she kept working with this story, because she says she entertained this question about the passage in her book, Seeds of Heaven. She says, well, what if Peter hadn't sunk? I'm like, oh, that's interesting to me. Success there. What if he had jumped out of the boat with perfect confidence, landed splat with both feet flat on that water, smiled across the waves at Jesus, gliding toward him without a moment's hesitation? And what if the other disciples had followed suit, piling out of the boat after them? All of them, perfectly walking on the water with perfect faith. What if they had just romped out there while the storm raged all around them and the wind was beating on the sails and the lightning was splitting the dark above their heads and they just walked out there? What if? It would be a totally different story. Might even be a better story. But it would not be a story about us. Because the truth about us is way more complicated. The truth about us is that I think we obey and fear, and we walk and we sink, and we believe and we doubt. But it's not like we do only one or the other. We do both. Our faith and our doubt are not mutually exclusive. They both exist in us at the same time, buoying us up and bearing us down, giving us courage and feeding our fears, supporting our weight on the wild seas of our lives and sinking us like stones. It's like Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote these words from prison God would have us know that we must live as persons who manage our lives without God. The God who lets us live in the world without the working hypothesis of God is the God before whom we stand continually. Before God, with God, we live without God. I wish it wasn't like that. I really wish it wasn't like that. It's really challenging, and it is no wonder that often we find ourselves so wrapped in our doubt. And maybe this is why Peter is so featured in the Gospel of Matthew, because he's us. We doubt. Before God and with God, we live without God. There's an author named Christian Wiman, and he wrote a book called My Bright Abyss, which I've also been reading, and he says this about phases of doubt. It's up there. You know the value of your doubt by the quality of the disquiet that it produces in you. Is it a furious centrifugal sort of anxiety that feeds on itself and never seems to move you in one direction? Is it an ironclad compulsion to refute and to find in even the most transfiguring experience, your own or others, some rational or psychological explanation? Is it an almost religious commitment to doubt itself? An assuredness that absolute doubt is the highest form of faith? Well, there's something static and self-enthralled about all these attitudes. Honest doubt, what I would call devotional doubt, is marked, it seems to me, by three qualities. There's humility, which makes one's attitude impossible to celebrate. There's insufficiency, which makes it impossible ever to rest. There's mystery, which continues to tug you upward, or at least outward, even in your lowest moments. And such doubt is painful, more painful, in fact, than any of those other forms. But it's pain that's active rather than passive, purifying rather than stultifying. And far beneath it, no matter how severe its drought, no matter how thoroughly your skepticism seems to have salted the ground of your soul, faith, durable faith, is steadily taking root. Peter shows us a durable faith that has taken root in his soul in the midst of all of his kinds of doubt. Here at the table, we call this growing in faith. And I believe we are so like him. We can get caught up, if you want to, and some of us are sitting here right now, in all the details of water walking. And we're sitting there thinking, did it happen or didn't it happen? I know someone's going to ask us that. It's okay. You can get caught up in that, or you can remember the times that you were water walking yourself. Have you ever tried to ride a bike? We're adults in this room. I'm guessing most of us can ride a bike. You're flying along and you remember one of your parents or a big older sibling, someone had his hand on the back of your seat. And you're going along and you're sure they still have their hand on the back of your seat. And then you realize, holy crap, they're back there waving. And then you crash. Right? Tried to ford a stream during a hike. I suck at this. You hop from log to log and you're doing great. You're doing great. Your shoes are great. You're going from here to there. Nobody's shoulders in front of you. And then you look down. And you realize just how deep that water is or how fast it's moving. And suddenly your balance is not good and you freeze. And you want help. And then grace comes in, because that's what this passage says. Help! Save me! That's what Peter cries out. And Jesus does. He's right there with his hand. And then the hard words come. Why did you doubt? Why did you doubt? I would say, Jesus, did you see that water? Look down. It's crazy. And he says, why did you doubt? Why do we doubt? Why do we doubt? Look, things are going really well. Our church is growing. Matt said, we had to move more pews in, right? Because we need more seats. And some of us know this place is getting kind of full of people. Did you know that our attendance last week was horrific? Matt and I counted, I kid you not, 100 people by name who were not here last week. And when did that happen? It was the Sunday that Matt announced that we're so crowded we have to add another worship service. Right? Why do we doubt?
This is not funny, people.
I know. But that's why we doubt. Our church is supported by your generous giving commitments. Many of you have a passion for making sure there is room for everyone at the table. Many of you also have an equal amount or more passion for giving to the United Way or the SPCA or some other charitable philanthropic enterprise or your local school. Why do we doubt? That's why we doubt. It's serious. I believe I am in God's hands, and God's hands are strong and good, except that my dad, who had a great life and ministry and then retired, got sick right after that. And we had plans for each other. He would have been a tremendous support to all of us in this place. He died. He got sick and died. Why do I doubt? That's why I doubt. I can't stand it. Like Peter, you see, we have faith and we have doubt. A strong next step for us is to keep our eyes on Jesus when we have those feelings. And to do this, we need to know who we think Jesus is. Savior, Lord, something. Your name for Jesus means what? To you. We need to make that claim at some point along our faith journey. And that takes a great deal of work and time and wondering. And it takes doing that with others who are doing the same thing alongside you. Notice, they were all in the boat together, right? Herman Wachin, one of my seminary professors, calls it, that boat, the little ship of the church. Tom Long claims, and I believe, that the recurrent experience of the church is that it strains to be faithful, like that ship, in perilous times, like storms on oceans, and that unlike a bowling league or the coalition to save historic buildings in your city, the church is not a group. The church is not a group of like-minded people who, on their own initiative, rally around a common desire or a worthy cause. The church, rather, is a peculiar people. I mean, look at you. We're a peculiar people. And we're called by God and set out on dangerous seas together. If it weren't for Jesus' command, I don't think anyone would get in the boat. I don't think I would. Who would volunteer to climb into that boat? And let's just notice that after this exchange, Jesus gets in the boat with them. And they keep on sailing. Jesus gets in the boat with them and they keep on sailing. And it's why we try to model that. We call them kitchen tables, right? You hear us talk about them all the time. And our kitchen tables are small groups that meet on a weekly basis. They're our boats. So we can tread out on the water and listen to someone's life experience and test out some of our own. That's why we have these people. We have doubts, some of which may paralyze us. But it isn't as though those doubts are bad things. In the doubt and the suffering, unfortunately, if this is news to you, it's how it is. In the doubt and in the suffering, unfortunately, it's most often when we recognize what we need and we focus on the life and teachings of Jesus and we try to put all that together. And that's why Jesus says, have courage, because it's not easy. I don't care what anybody says, it's not easy. So what is your next step in faith going to be? We really want everyone to take one. We just can't tell you what yours is. You have to do that work. Do you need to be baptized? Is that your next step? Adopted into God's family by water and the Spirit? Do you want to think more about taking our blueprint group and learning the method in Methodism? Is it time for you? You've already done all those things. Is it time for you to finally join your first kitchen table? Where's Tim? He's not in here. Tim, raise your hand. Talk to him. Tim, we'll help you. Have you been in a kitchen table regularly, and is it time for you to call Tim and say, I need to go back in? My schedule's changed. I'm ready to find a new one. Only you know what step is next for you. But whatever that is, I don't know where it went, we want you to write it on the deep card. We want you to write it down and then share it either with your kitchen table or your partner or your family out loud in writing. Christian Wiman's words again. It is a strange thing how sometimes merely to talk honestly of God, even if it is only to articulate our feelings of separation and confusion, can bring peace to our spirits. What you feel when releasing yourself to speak of the deepest needs of your spirit is the fact that no other needs can be spoken of outside of that context. You cannot work on the structure of your life if the ground of your being is unsure. So you remember that Susanna did yoga on her board, right? So, I did do yoga on the board. I did. And this isn't going to mean anything to anyone who doesn't do yoga, but I did child's pose. And I did downward facing dog. That was scary. But see, on downward dog, it's all four limbs are on the board. Both feet and both hands. But my butt was kind of in the air. No pictures. I did what I could. And Sophia and Susanna watched over me in love. We did it together. That's how next steps work. That's how we do it here. And it's how we are going to come to this table. All of us, in our own time, together, forming lines around this room. I think of them as little church boats. Try it.
Christ be with me. Christ before me. Christ behind me. Christ within me. Christ below me, Christ above me, Christ be with me. At my right hand, at my as I stumble, as I fall down, Christ, as I stand, Christ in the heart of Christ in the mouth of everyone who speaks of me. Christ in every eye that sees me. Christ in every ear that